would you like to scale a company to nine figures? Lee Benson will tell us how. And what's so special about Lee is that he's a sought-after speaker and author on the topics of value creation, leadership, execution, and strategy, and serial entrepreneur. So tell me more, Lee, about how do you scale a company to nine figures?
Welcome to Awakened Titans Podcast with Lily Patrescu. Mind-blowing conversations with influential business titans sharing how you can manifest abundance, love, joy, success through quantum awakening, quantum manifestation, quantum healing, quantum miracles, exponential business growth, and innovative products and services.
Yeah, that's interesting. There's really no one secret answer to doing that. But I would say that if you want to scale to nine figures for whatever your reasons are, first look at your business or the idea and answer the question, is that even possible? Have others done it? Is it something brand new? So I think back to early 90s when I started the first of my eight companies. I've started from scratch now. And it was a special processing business, and I loved it, but it was really hard to go get work every single month and pay the bills and go through it. And I started doing some research, and we were actually the biggest in the country at just over $1 million a year in sales. Nobody else was doing it. So wait a minute, there's no addressable market here that could get that to nine figures or eight figures. And so I thought about it, and I took the one process that we were doing that had a lot of different applications, and said, well, let's apply it to repairing aircraft parts. We'll start another company and then another company that are, you know, all related to the aftermarket and aviation, you know, safely reducing aircraft operating costs for our customers. And we went from something that was, you know, we're the largest at $1 million. The next couple of businesses, one of them, you know, there's $500 billion in potential out there. So we just kept growing this thing. And then over about 23 years, ended up with a company with over 500 employees. We had 2,000 customers in 60 countries, doing around $100 million in sales, very profitable. We weren't even looking to sell, but a company came in and made us an offer. And there's a long story around that, but it took about 7 months to come up with something that made sense for us, and we sold it for well into nine figures. So you actually have to have something that can grow to that. And another thing I would say is that it was never about, let's see how big we can get. It was always about, let's continually and responsibly grow the value of the business, because that's the healthiest, best thing for all the stakeholders, and we'll see what happens. I think when entrepreneurs pick a number and they just start chasing that, they miss out on, hey, what's the real value we're creating in the world? And are we growing and benefiting all stakeholders as we do it? It's a healthy, fun journey. So for me, it's all about the balance there. Does that make sense, Lily?
Yes. Tell me more about the most important number, the book you have written, and how does that connect with scaling a company to nine figures?
Yeah, thank you for that question. After decades of kind of making all the mistakes that everybody makes and figuring stuff out, reinventing the wheel over and over again, the biggest challenge that I think most organizations have is, how do you align everybody in the business to creating value? And it's not adding value, it's creating value, and creating the value that we hired them to create. And if we're all doing it well together, we're continually and responsibly increasing the total value of the business. So, for example, if the business is worth $1 million today, 3 years from now, the goal might be you want it to be worth $3 million or $5 million or something like that. Well, how do we align everybody to do it? And so there are a lot of popular operating systems out there, you know, 40X, OKRs, EOS, scaling up. There's probably a dozen popular ones and hundreds, if not thousands, of different operating systems that have been designed by consultants. So when I looked at all of them, they seem to make process more important than what is most important. And what's most important is increasing the value of the business. And they would all have you learn a new language. Well, why do that? Let's just keep using the language that makes sense for our business. And so this concept of most important number for the entire organization, what's the one number that would be reflective of the value of your business? So if you're in a business, for example, that when they sell, it's a multiple of EBITDA, For example, then what is your EBITDA today? Where do you want it to be in a year, in 2 years, 3 years? And based on what, and is everybody doing the right work to move it there? So the most important number for the business would be that. And then there's a sort of a test to make sure you have the right most important number. And that test is, will that number drive the majority of the right behaviors inside your organization or with that particular team? And it's always helpful to make a list of, hey, with this number, it's going to drive these behaviors that are beneficial, and it could drive these behaviors that are taking away from the value of the business. So we want to be watchful of that. But what is that one number that most reflects the value that the organization is creating as a whole? What would you sell it for? And will it drive the majority of the right behaviors? And then I thought, well, how do we align everybody in the organization? So as you go out from there, you have, and again, I love working with startups, very early stage, small, large, small, medium, all the way to, $60 billion plus market cap public companies. The same principles apply. So let's say sales, marketing, operations, customer service, legal, finance. All of those teams will have a most important number that passes the same test. And what is that one number that's reflective of the value that the team was designed to create and that will drive the majority of the right behaviors? And that number is going to be different the majority of the time from what it is for the overall organization. But you can cascade this down to 3 teams, 10 teams, 100 teams, thousands of teams. It doesn't matter. When you get it right, the value that's created accretes up all the way to continually increasing the value of the business. So that actually made it pretty easy to scale the company. I worked, the first, I'd say 5 or 6 years, it was 80-hour weeks plus, years on end. And I loved it. Never felt like work. I love working for myself and building value with and through others. But towards the end, when I sold the company, I didn't have to spend 15 hours a week running the business. I spent the majority of my time developing the 64 leaders that we had and working with some of the larger companies, our customers that we had to put bigger deals together. So that most important number concept, and in my book, I call it the mind management system, where the most important number, men, M-I-N, most important number. And then second is drivers. So what are the categories of work that every single leader with their team can leverage to improve their most important number? Those are the drivers. They're evergreen. It's continuous improvement. And so this, it was so elegant, and it got to a place where every single leader and virtually every employee was acting like the CEO of their own role, and they're running these businesses within a business. And it is super energizing and fun when you're accomplishing big things. It's incredible. And because of this system, even with 500 team members, now that's small compared to the company that bought us, but it's large compared to most businesses out there. I could see what everybody was doing in terms of the value they were creating within seconds. I could look at the drivers, look at their meetings, because once I can see the value they're creating, the next thing I want to know is what's the best work they're doing to continually create that value and increase it and drive the right culture and everything else that goes with it. So that's kind of a long answer to your question, but it's all in my book, Your Most Important Number. It's a simple, elegant way to continually and responsibly increase the value of your business.
Thank you. Tell us more about the most important number of every person in your company, because, for example, HR has a different most important number, and the CEO has a different most important number, and the CFO a different most important number. Tell us about the most important number for every person that has like a critical role in your company, and how do they manage to align that with the goal of the business owner?
Yeah, so let's take the one example of HR. So I think about it as overarching for the company, then I go to a department or a function. So in HR, usually when I start working with, or my team starts working with an organization, they will say, this would be the HR team, well, I think our most important number needs to be retention. And I said, okay, well, we need to make sure it's going to drive all the right behaviors. And And this is such a perfect example. And I just say, well, okay, let's say hypothetically, you hire me to run HR for your business. We're 3 years down the road. I have 95% retention. I won big time based on my most important number. Never mind that over half the employees can't do what they were hired to do, but I kept them. So that most important number does not drive the majority of the right behaviors. A better most important number for HR would be the percentage of seats filled with capable people. And capable to me is that they are delivering on the outcomes that they were hired to deliver on. So if this measurable outcome for a role, and every role in an organization, I don't care what it is, has that outcome, or typically it can be two or three, but never more than four, that we're going to measure against. So you're capable of delivering on those outcomes you were hired to deliver on. So that's what I mean by capable. And every role in an organization, even before you have a person in there, as you're designing the structure of your business, the organizational structure, within that structure, you have functions. Within the functions, you have roles. Well, what are the outcomes that role is going to be accountable for? What are the sort of administrative duties that everybody has to do as just part of the business? And what are the capabilities that somebody coming into that role would have to have a shot at achieving those outcomes? Design that first, because I think about it, outcomes, structure, and then people. People are the most important. I mean, we cause all the, amazing things to happen, amazing cultures or the opposite of that, but it's all about the people. But if we get the outcomes that we want, we get the structure designed properly, including roles designed the way I just said, and then we find people that fit those roles, that sets them up for a much higher chance of success. And so that's how I think about it. And you could take every single function, whether it's legal or finance. I think finance is most important number, whether you just have a bookkeeper, an accountant, a CFO, controller, whatever, an entire team. I think their most important number should be cash flow. And I believe that finance's job is to help every single leader in the organization discover the 1, 2, 3, probably no more than 6 numbers that are most impactful to their decision making, so they can apply it to increase the cash flow within an organization or profitability. So I can just go one after another and go through this, and it aligns everything that everyone's doing to continually increasing the value of the business. And one question I like to ask when I work with a new senior leadership team, the CEOs in the room, the senior team, could be 3 people, could be 12 people. I'll just say, I think philosophically the number one job of the CEO is to continually and responsibly increase the value of the business. What do you think about that? And usually, I've never seen them say no. It's always, well, yeah, that sounds right. If I ask the question without setting up with my preference, I get a lot of different answers. I think CEOs are looking for something just to really land on and say, this is what I'm supposed to do. And then the next thing I say is, well, that means by proxy, the senior leadership team is collectively supposed to do the same thing. That's your goal. What do you think? And it's always yes. Once we start there, then it's easy to cascade it through the organization. But that's always the first place to start. If we don't have alignment around what we're supposed to be doing, i.e. the value we're supposed to be creating at the top, how are we going to cascade alignment out to the front lines, no matter how large or small your business is?
Thank you. How do we get the people who work for you, how do we get them ultra enrolled, not only in the tasks that they're supposed to be doing, but also in taking initiative? Because what I found is that in any job that I've ever had, I was never interested in just performing the task. I always wanted to excel, to optimize, to see what could be done faster, better, shorter time frame, creative approach to get the best possible outcome. But I find after, hiring so many people, that most people are not like this. So I'm wondering, first of all, how do you hire these kind of people who are able to take initiative and take your company further, sometimes further than you've considered could be possible? And how do you control these people so that they don't take, their own ideas and then kind of take your company to a direction you don't want it to go?
Yeah, so much in that gigantic question that you just asked. So for me, it's about the culture. And the definition of leadership that I really like, you know, leadership is creating value with and through others. And then once a leader comes into the organization, their job is to get results and foster an environment where every team member is intrinsically motivated and empowered to create more value over time. So another way to say this is we create the environment from which everyone creates value inside the organization. So the rules of engagement, the intentional alignment tools around our mission, behaviors, leadership traits, et cetera, all of that causes human nature, if you will, to kind of move in a direction. Because what you're describing, to me, there's always a better way than we can think of today, and it's our job to find it. That's just it. And it's super exciting when we have a culture that we're encouraging that, we're reinforcing that, we're moving in that direction. And I've seen more and more people get on the bus because you have let's say rules of engagement for a nonprofit, for a for-profit, for a government organization. It's the same people, it's the same human nature, but why, generally speaking, do they all act different in those environments? It's the environment that we create around it. So if we want to encourage this innovation and everything else, well, what are the behaviors that we've listed that we're holding everybody accountable to as part of our approach to having an intentional culture to cause that to happen? So rather than saying, I think a real big challenge in organizations is people doing what they say they'll do, which is the observable part of integrity. So rather than having a set of values on the wall and one of them is integrity and you get, you know, dozens, if not more, interpretations of what that means, why don't we just say high performing employees throughout this organization do what they say they will, or they're fully engaged and participate within the team, or they're looking for a better way every day. So we can come up with these observable behaviors and hold everybody accountable to it. So we can actually design an intentional culture, a mission that tells customers in a compelling way the value that we're providing, why they should do work with us. It tells every team member why they have a paycheck, because if we don't deliver the value, they're in trouble. We have a vision that talks about where we're going, can never fully get there, but as we're moving in that direction, it's making us more profitable, more valuable, good for all the stakeholders. So the intentional culture piece is there. The approach to leadership is there. How do you think about being a leader? You know, is it really creating value with and through others? With doesn't mean controlling anybody. With means we're all on this and helping each other, teaching each other, learning how to create more and more value. And I've seen this happen in organizations that culturally just seem to be stuck in the mud. Create the right environment, everybody lights up, in my view. Does that fully answer your question? There's so much more I could go into here.
Yes. Tell me about what are your 10 commandments to scale a company to 9 figures?
Well, I don't have 10 commandments around that. I've never even really used that language. But for me, it's really, again, initially foundationally saying, hey, we have something that could be that big, but that can't be the goal. It's got to be, we need to have a solid foundation that we can grow from. Once we have that, okay, where are we going to go from there? You get everybody engaged and actively involved in coming up with that plan so the entire team owns it. And then you take that step and then you take the next step. And if you stay in that frame of mind, you'll get there eventually if you're doing the right work. If you're stuck, you're not doing the right work. So revisit what you're actually doing. And it was interesting when I sold my business for 9 figures in 2016, one of my companies, I could easily see a path to $1 billion. It's like, oh, there it is. When I first started, it was like, man, I hope we get to $1 million in sales someday. And then once we started closing on $1 million, I could easily see $5 million. And we closed on that. I could easily see 25 and then 50, then 100. And then it was just, there it is, like right in front of me. There's a path to $1 billion. Way easier said than done. Like a plan or an idea, and I've heard this on some of your other podcasts that I listen to, is just a plan or an idea. It's the easiest possible thing to come up with it. It's intellectually stimulating. Isn't this really cool? And I say in my book, Your Most Important Number, congratulations, you have a strategy. You're 3% of the way there. 97% is actually doing it. And I think we as leaders should be just as passionate about executing as we are about coming up with the path or the strategy, if you will. And to me, strategy is nothing more than approaches to increasing the value of your business. It's not some heady thing that only a few people can do. When you meet with your team and you want to come up with strategic initiatives, well, these initiatives should be approaches to increasing the value of your business. What do you have? What would actually do it? And, you know, through that, I've come up with a mantra called, or just simply says, do less better.
Thank you. Yeah. Tell us what lit up the fire within you to cause you to become this awakened titan so that you can scale a company to nine figures and not just one to make so many companies successful.
Yeah, I would say in two words, struggle better. And something started with me really young, where I would struggle to develop a capability. And my definition of struggle is any effort put forth to improve a life condition, develop a capability or character trait, sometimes all of that at once. And so struggle to develop a capability that would build my confidence as early as 6 years old. And then I would use that to create value, you know, exchange my best efforts for the accumulated best efforts of somebody else, which we call money. And then I would keep taking bigger and bigger and bigger steps. And after a while, when something was really, really hard, I would get this feeling and say, gosh, I've done this so many times now. This is going to be incredible when I come out the other side. I don't win at everything, but I just trust that process. I call it the value creation cycle. Struggle to develop a capability, character trait, improve life condition, build confidence, use that to create more value in the world. Keep taking bigger steps. And that's just fun, Lily. It's so much fun to be in that space. And the if I was going to have a personal most important number, which this is mine, it's internal fulfillment. We can't be happy all the time. And but we can over time, if we're doing the right work and leaning in, we can increase our internal fulfillment. And that's been pretty consistent for me for a lot of years. And when I think about sort of the theme of your podcast, the way it's landing on me, I actually believe the purpose of this human experience, the purpose in life here is to elevate human consciousness, because the more we figure out, the easier things get, the more value we can create, the, you know, the less stressed we are in all of it. And the simple way to say it, you know, the more shit we figure out, everything gets better if we're doing it in the right way. And I love that. And when folks talk about, gosh, I want to operate at this level of consciousness or that level, when I hear that, I think, gosh, they're really kind of missing the point. The point is be right here, figure more and more stuff out and enjoy the journey and be where you are, and you'll grow at the rate that you're doing the work. And if we don't fully do it right here, how are we ever going to get there? We're just not. And this is my view, of course, and you've thought a lot more about this, I think, than I have.
Thank you. What helped you to overcome self-doubt or fears or failures or situations where things felt like nothing kind of was moving forward?
Yeah, this value creation cycle I just described got me to trust the struggle. You know, why is it that with the best of intentions, parents take struggles away from the kids and they say, well, I don't want them to struggle like I did. And then they become an adult at 18 and they're not really an adult. They now move into the emerging adult phase because parents didn't do them any favors by removing all these struggles. And it could take them till 36 before they actually act like it. And then we see people in business, leaders, for example, which is crazy to me. They act like complete victims when things don't roll out perfectly every day. I'm like, well, wait a minute. If things were perfect every day, we wouldn't need a leader. This is your job. It's like, value the struggle. All of the opportunity in the world, in my opinion, is in the struggle. It just is. And the more intense the struggle, the more opportunity. If it's making money, great. When I think about creating value, and I've got my own podcast titled Show Your Value, The Art of Value Creation, I think about it holistically. There's material value creation, emotional energy, and spiritual value creation. And material, everybody gets its money. There's so much virtue signaling going on in the world where people say, oh, it's not about the money, it's about other things. But when you truly look at their actions, it's literally 95% about the money most of the time. And then the second category, emotional energy value creation. Positive emotional energy to me is the scarcest commodity on the planet. I'd rather live half as long on 9 or 10 on a scale from 1 to 10 than twice as long on 1 or 2. It would just be so much more fulfilling of a life. And I think positive emotional energy is the X factor for leaders. And then the spiritual value creation, it's not about spirituality to me. It's not about, it's about connectedness. And, you know, starting with kids connected with themselves, with their siblings, other family members, to communities that are important to you. And in all of my businesses, you know, something that you asked about, you know, around culture, I would go out of my way to have programs that would strengthen relationships between team members, that connectedness. The one that we mentioned earlier that I sold, I put in a 10,000 square foot gym, had full-time functional movement trainers in there, told team members if they worked out twice a week on average for an entire month, we'd pay 100% of the health insurance premium the following month. They have to train with other employees. So out of 500 team members, we'd have 360 plus qualifying for this program. And so they made more money by doing it. They strengthened these bonds, even told them if your family members come in, we'll put more money in your paycheck. And so every day, dozens of spouses coming in, kids programs. It was so cool. There wasn't a weekend that went by, at least rarely went by, where there wasn't 10 plus barbecues that I was invited to. Like, we really strengthened these bonds. And I never sat back and go, I want employees to feel this way and we want to, you know, make that happen. And it's like, I create the environment, or the leadership team creates the environment from which they all create value, and they'll feel the way they're going to feel. I can't control that, but I want it to be this incredible journey we're taking together. It's developmental. And we all grow faster that way. So that this really gets down to what I call productive engagement. If it's all about the money, and it's wildly important, you know, because it measures the value of your business, you're going to, and you don't focus on emotional value or the connectedness on the spiritual side value, your level of productive engagement is going to be a lot lower. And productive engagement is engaged in creating the value they were hired to create that they agreed to. And so when you get it right across the board, what I'm noticing, and it's over and over and over again, is that the level of productive engagement is significantly higher than the competition. And it's just a lot more fun to be in that environment.
Thank you. Tell us where entrepreneurs can connect with you.
Sure. Please go to my website, which is etw.com. And in there, you can see everything around our approach to leadership. We have the Leadership Value Lab. Love for you to join that. I do a live monthly call around a whole bunch of principles here around creating value, continually increasing the value of a business. And the mind management systems that we have, the software's on the website. You can sign up for users free, and then it's $12 for a user, you know, per month after that, super low cost. You can get my book there. And then also connect with me on LinkedIn. Love the conversations that are happening over there, and all of us, you know, collectively building our capabilities so we can all create more value.
Thank you.
Follow us for more interviews with world's most influential business titans, providing you with the insights to awaken to your full potential so you can get paid to be yourself, find true happiness, and manifest anything you desire.